Welcome to the SF Squeecast, in which a group of science fiction and fantasy professionals squee about things SF-nal in a never-ending panel discussion of vague positivity. I'm your moderator, Lynn M. Thomas. I'm joined today by Squeecast regulars, Elizabeth Baer.
Hello.
Paul Cornell.
Good evening.
Shauna McGuire.
Howdy.
Michael Damian Thomas.
Hello.
And Kat Valenti.
Hi.
So, dear listeners, this episode is a milestone for us, and it's a bit of a bittersweet one. We have decided that due to the happy circumstance that we are all ridiculously busy at this point and getting together has become nigh impossible, even over the magic of the internet, we need to put the Squeecast on hiatus. Now, I know those are scary words for the Doctor Who fans out there. but it is indeed on hiatus.
Are we coming back in 15 years' time? Is that
yes, 15 years.
Well, that's about when Tom will give you your evenings back.
Oh, yes. Then it can be Thomas instead of me, and it will be an entirely new crew doing it.
That's right.
Yeah, I'd rather not replace you with a hormonal teenage boy. That doesn't work out well.
It didn't work out the last time, did it?
No, it really didn't.
SF Squeecast the Next Generation.
Oh, this is going to be terrifying. So, dear listeners, this is the final regular episode of the SF Squeecast. We have all had a long discussion about this, and while we are happy to be reunited in person and possibly do something that way if things work out so that that's possible, we're not planning to record any more new episodes in which we get together on Skype and chat together for the foreseeable future. We're not saying never, but this is the on hiatus the BBC actually intended, I think, with Doctor Who.
Yeah. Or we're getting another big producer from America.
Because that's not scary.
Yes. We will be on the Fox Network on Friday nights.
No! That never goes well!
We're moving to the CW.
If we're really lucky, we'll be a Netflix original.
No, I want us to be Legends of Tomorrow.
And we'll get beaten by Roseanne.
Oh, God.
Because, listeners who are not familiar with Doctor Who, that's what happened to the Doctor Who pilot movie starring Paul McGann, close bracket.
Yes.
It wasn't a kind of sexual fantasy of mine.
I'm uncomfortable.
You are rocking me to sleep tonight, Paul.
Yes, I can't unsee that.
I visualized. Never visualize.
So yeah.
So Doctor Who related metaphors apart. Yes.
Here we are.
Moving on now.
Moving on.
Is what we are.
Yes. Well, and that's basically what happened with all of us. We all got really, really busy. It's a good problem to have.
Speak for yourself. I just forgot to pick up the torch and I've been eaten by a Gru.
I told you not to pick up that Gru at the Humane Society.
It was adorable.
They are always adorable when they are small.
It's true.
Well,
notes of silence. This is what it sounds like.
Somebody didn't want an actual topic.
This is what happens.
This is what happens when we don't have a topic, which is why, well, maybe we should have done. I'm sorry.
No, I was actually thinking this is what happens when none of us have slept in 3 months.
Yeah,
honestly, after finishing my word count last night, I watched about 12 episodes of Nevermind the Buzzcocks in a row. So unless we're doing music trivia, my brain is not online.
All right.
Oh, shall I sing you? Shall I hum you a song?
Yes.
Oh, no, that would be a copyright infringement as well. Yeah.
We have 7 seconds to get it in.
I just did 12 days at Disney World.
Ooh.
And to give you an idea of how generally exhausted I am, there's this ride at Disney World called the Hollywood Tower of Terror. It is 800 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Probably not actually 800 feet tall, but it seems that way. It's definitely 13 stories tall. Mm-hmm. They put you in a big elevator and they lift you up and then they drop you a lot. It is enough of a drop. It's a gravity assisted free fall, which means that you're not just falling at the speed the object would normally fall. You are being hauled downward by a winch. You get 6 to 8 inches clearance between the seat and your butt on the downward portions because you are falling that fast. And it was my butt re-impacting with the seat that woke me up.
Oh my God.
After I had gone to sleep on the Tower of Terror.
Wow.
Yeah. It's also one of the rides you get a video of now, and yep. Our video is the funniest thing you've ever seen because you can actually see me come back to consciousness. And I just look so confused for a moment before we begin to plummet again and I start screaming.
You're kind of Disney jaded. Disney has ceased to be hardcore enough for you. You need more serious thrills.
I'm not Disney jaded. I'm just that comfortable. I brought a Stephen King book and I read Stephen King in Disney World and was like, all of the things that make me feel safe are surrounding me right now. I can finally sleep.
You brought a book on the Tower of Terror.
Not on the Tower of Terror, for the line.
I feel like that's a ride I never want to go on.
Oh, it ended up being Caitlin's favorite ride during the Make-A-Wish trip.
I can't imagine anything I would want to do less other than possibly sticking my hand in a blender.
That's pretty much what my face looks like in the photo.
Caitlin is laughing, and Lynn looks like she is having the worst possible moment of her life.
I don't even like water slides. They're too scary.
If you're ever at Disney World, though, I do highly recommend go through the line for the Tower of Terror.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They will vary. The ride operators are awesome. They will absolutely take you out a normal elevator with no drops if you just say at the end that you've changed your mind.
In terms of
atmospherics and ride design and this theory called psychological hang time, which the Disney Imagineers use a lot, but I think that writers can really apply to our work, mm-hmm. The Tower of Terror is a masterwork. It is absolutely worth walking through the ride queue area just to kind of get the feel of it, even if you don't want to be dropped from 13 stories up in the air.
Yeah, I the whole falling thing, I'm just really not big on.
Yeah,
now that I've admitted that, like every convention I go to from now on is going to push me off a roof.
That
would be the worst Worldcon bid ever.
Is that part of the bid? We will push Bear off a roof. It's the finish, isn't it?
It's the Dubai bid. It's the Worldcon will take place as you're falling off the tower.
it's the North Korean Worldcon bid.
No. You know, everyone's got their thing. There's another coaster at Disney that I just won't ride, even though it's my girlfriend's favorite. It's called Expedition Everest, and you do the whole coaster in one direction, and then you do the entire coaster in reverse. Mm-hmm. Mm. So now you're falling and upside down, and you can't see where you're going. No. Thanks. No.
Yeah, I love roller coasters, but I mean, this is ridiculous for somebody who rock climbs, right? But falling is just terrifying. I hate it.
I'm right there with you, Bear. I was difficult to convince on the Tower of Terror, and I have the photographic evidence to prove that it was not fun for me.
The ride that almost killed you was at Universal, that one rock and roller
coaster.
Yeah,
the Rip Ride Rocket coaster at Universal. I had a heat stroke that day, our first day at Universal, and I rode that, and it the beginning of the coaster is basically it feels as though it is a sheer drop, and then it goes into coaster land, and I almost never get ill on coasters, and I was like, I got off that thing, and not only did my legs not work, but my digestive system was rebelling very heavily too. It was not pretty, and it was about 3 hours before I could put anything in me again. And I was like, just going to sit here in the shade for a while and not move.
I'm again it.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
All right, well, we're failing to squee.
Yeah,
so.
We are.
Yes.
Well, I mean, we had a great time at Disney World. It's just that particular ride at Universal was not for me that moment.
Mm. I'm planning to try to convince Kat to go to Disney World with me.
I want to go to Disney World with you. There's no
we would have the best
I'm
time.
Actually, you know, I'm going. I'm going to Disney World in September.
Oh.
I'm guest of honor at Orlando Con in September. So obviously, I'm in Disney World. Like, that's not.
Where are you staying?
Wherever they put me, I assume.
Wait.
I might want to try staying in one of the official hotels for my extra Disney World time.
Yeah, you need to contact me, Bug. Have you been to Disney World before?
Yes, I have. I spent New Year's Eve at Disney World. It was a truly magical experience.
It's magical.
It really was. Like, I'm laughing at them and being sarcastic, but I'm not. Like, it was, I was standing in front of the castle when the fireworks went off, and it was amazing. Like, it was being, like, being inside my television.
It's just the scale of it is it stuns me every time. I can't imagine staying off property
as well. Like, after our car, they shut the gate. We're like, we're full. That's it. No more. So it was pretty cool. But yes, I have been once. I've been to Disneyland, as you and I have discussed. I believe now I have been to Disneyland 39 times. I feel like that's something people would expect of Shannon, but be somewhat surprised about with me.
I did not know that about you.
Yeah, well, so my my parents were divorced when I was quite young, and my mother lived in California. And the fact is that, like, when one parent lives in California and can easily and cheaply go to Disneyland, like, and they're the visitation parent, you end up going to Disneyland a lot.
Yeah.
So I went all the time as a kid and ended up going a lot as an adult as well. And I didn't really ever mean to, but I have been there a lot. I love it.
Disneyland is best. I love Disney World, but it always just makes me want to go back to Disneyland where I can walk everywhere.
I know the layout.
It takes an hour to get to my hotel.
I know, like, the neighborhood I grew up in or the world map in Zelda or any of those things. Like, I can just get around so easily.
It's very low-key squeeing.
I feel like Kat has just revealed the inner keys to her psyche. The neighborhood she grew up in, the world map of Zelda, and Disneyland.
Time to get personal here.
Those are the horcruxes, the Kat Valente horcruxes.
And I was wondering, I thought maybe we could squeak tonight about what our favorite things from the podcast have been over the years. You know, who are our favorite guests and our favorite live ones and things like that.
I'll go first.
Go.
My favorite is always the live ones, always the ones we've done together. But the drunk one that we never broadcast was awesome. I feel like it was some of our best work. And I'm told it will never be broadcast, but it is one for the archives.
Yeah, the audio did not work on it.
Yeah,
so.
We had a recording fail.
The audience kept
bringing us more drinks. Like, I would just look down and someone would have put a rum and coke in front of me.
Yes.
I wasn't actually there for that, was I?
That's why I said some of our best work instead of our best work.
Yeah,
it's extraordinary. Drunkenness of the Screecast and I wasn't there. Who'd have thought?
Well, it was right before the Hugos were announced, and we had been making merry at that French restaurant, you know, at what used to be the Sofitel across from the Convergence Hotel Hall. And then we went there, and then like good scotches and whiskeys kept showing up in front of us.
We went to Minicon and they got us drunk. Yeah. Shocking. That never happens at Minicon.
Stunning.
It's Minneapolis fandom, man. The level of alcohol consumption.
Yeah.
And it's good booze, so it's hard to say no.
Me and Caroline are going to Convergence as our holiday.
Excellent.
Tom's going to stay with his granny and granddad on the farm, which sounds like a euphemism now. I mean, no.
It really does. Are you getting
sending
him back?
The toddler to a farm.
It actually just sounds like the beginning of a fantasy novel.
Tom wants to stay
with his grandmother and grandfather.
He's been evacuated from the city.
He will indeed have a secondary world adventure. He will.
I realize that no one can actually see this, but I feel that my house is right on the town common. And there is a young lady in extremely skinny black leggings all the way across the common who is wearing the biggest snow white sneakers I have ever seen in my life. And she looks like a Clydesdale with really skinny legs. She has these enormous feet. And I don't know why I needed to share that.
The SF Squeecast story.
So the drunken one.
Drunken one.
This is what we're like when we're sober.
Yeah.
My favorite was the Shy Con one with Jay.
Oh yeah, that was good. With the ice cream.
Yes.
Yeah, that one that was definitely among my favorites.
It was just such a packed crowd. There was so much nervous energy.
And by nervous energy, you mean sheer panic.
Yes.
That felt like a proper live experience. That was excellent.
Yeah. That was,
and it was in the evening, which I feel like the live ones we do in the evening are always better. The one we did at WindyCon was in the morning, and I feel like all of us were a little like,
Happy Screen Con.
And then there was the when Gene Wolfe came into that one, and I was like, well, there goes some jokes. I just not in front of Gene. I feel
did you
weird.
Have a whole bit about Gene Wolfe? Like, did you just put away your piece of paper with all of your bits about Gene Wolfe? Just like.
Yeah, I did. We were talking about like
your routine.
I had that moment because I think someone asked or came up like, "What was our most influential books or whatever?" And I just suddenly was like, "I can't talk about Book of the New Sun right now because I am way too, because he's right there, and I would feel okay."
What if that was your only chance to talk about Book of the New Sun in front of Gene Wolfe?
Book of the New Fun is entirely.
Do not taunt Happy New Fun.
The Book of the New Fun. No, that is not the title of that book.
I'm pretty.
Unless this is some new definition of fun.
I did talk to him about it at we had dinner with him and his wife once, and I did talk about it then. So I feel like I did it already, but it was that kind of like, oh, if I stumble on anything right now, I would just feel so embarrassed.
Well, so much you probably would have appreciated it, but
that's fair enough.
Yeah,
I liked actually giving you guys the Hugo Award. I was pretty pleased about that. That was really nice.
That was cool.
I very, very fondly remember sitting with Shannon in the front row, holding each other's hands so very tightly the first time we won. And I had counted the Hugos up on stage and was like, well, we're not going to win because there's not enough. So I was completely relaxed for the announcement of that commencement or the announcement of that category. I just sat back in my chair, like whatever, no tension in my muscles whatsoever. They called our name and I went, what? What? And Shannon was like, no, we have to get up and go now. Like, come on. But yeah, I completely not gone through the process. Yes. I counted twice.
That they that's called that your name. I'm right here. That they, you know.
No. That was the first time we won.
You were the second time.
San Antonio was the second one.
Yeah.
And actually, I thought our San Antonio Squeecast, that was the one we did with Howard Taylor, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
That was a great one. Oh, that was so much fun. He's a lot of fun to podcast with. I gotta say. Hi, Howard. it was actually the first time I'd met him in person, and I was just blown away by how funny and sharp he was.
Mm-hmm. He's dry, isn't he?
Yes. Mm. Actually, we've had so many good guests.
Yeah. I mean, certainly in terms of download numbers, our biggest guest by far was when George R.R. Martin joined us. We had horrendous
technical difficulties.
Yes. Well, there's nothing more fun than trying to Skype to a landline. That is always really excellent practice in podcasting.
Yes. I really enjoyed having a mall on. That was That was a great episode.
And I do have to note for the record, just on the off chance that Javi Grillo Marks Watch catches this, because I promised like 2.5 years ago when he joined us on the podcast that I would cosplay Black Canary. I finally have it together. I will be doing it at Convergence.
Excellent.
So I have as my last act.
is that what you're going to wear for your vow renewal?
No, no.
She is now.
No.
I've been working on the Green Arrow look. Got the mustache going.
Yeah, I was going to say you'll be cultivating your goatee there, Michael.
Yeah.
No, it's a different outfit for the vow renewal.
Mary Robinette's been making a dress for Lynn.
Mary's making me a proper wedding dress with a court train. So it's going to be Regency outfits for us.
Caroline is doing the magic bit.
Yes.
Yes. And we are deeply grateful for that. So anyway, this now has to go out after July.
It doesn't matter.
It's too late now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's totally
all a secret.
Fine. It's the worst kept secret in fandom, basically. But dear listeners, we are renewing our vows of Convergence, and that's all you need to know. So
we could edit that bit out.
It's okay. It's fine. It really is. And the joke is too good. The joke, frankly, is too good to not leave in. So
we're all renewing our vows. The entire Squeecast is
right.
Married.
It's a group
Speaking of Minneapolis fandom,
I'm marrying the Tower of Terror.
Oh, come on. He's putting you to sleep already.
He's full of frogs. I found a frog there. That's all I need.
Okay, there's our title.
Yeah.
A frog.
He's full of frogs.
Power of marriage.
My God, he's full of frogs.
So, yeah.
Who was our first guest?
Our first guest was Javi, wasn't it?
No, it was Jim Hines for
that's right.
Yeah.
It was the Halloween themed episode.
That's right.
And then Jim is also our only two-time guest, isn't
yes.
he?
Yes, unless you Scott is sort of because of the Lost episode.
Yes.
Right.
Because Scott guested on the episode that was never broadcast. So he holds the same record as Jim, but not publicly.
I'm uncomfortable.
It was a Christmas episode as well, where Paul had said some really lovely things that I was actually typing into a note file as he was saying them. So I thought that they were... You're talking about how... It's a Wonderful Life that you had brought to talk about?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And you were talking about that there are people in the world who are so wealthy and so posh that their existence borders on fairyland. And I was like, this is amazing, writing it down. And it was such a thoughtful episode. And so, I mean, many things you say around Christmas tend to take on that.
Oh, well, thank
like
you.
Sheen. But I thought it was a really lovely episode.
Thank you very much. I go a little mad around Christmas.
The right ways, though.
We keep getting tempted to start buying all the little Christmas village stuff and building it like a giant town. A miniature town of Christmas in our house.
There's nowhere to put that
As
stuff.
Long as you populate it with Doctor Who figures, I think
you're... Well, we did the Nativity last year with all the
yes.
action figures.
Yes.
But no, I think a Christmas village populated with Doctor Who figures, I mean, it's perfectly appropriate.
Yeah.
As someone who maintains a tiny village in her house, remember that there is a huge amount of dusting involved with a tiny village.
Yes.
Otherwise, everyone slowly becomes a weeping angel. And my creepy dog collection does not need that patina to make it worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I just... the Chicago Tribune was out doing a thing about geek collectibles. Right before the C2E2 convention.
Nerd caves.
Nerd caves, they called it. So they came to our house, and I spent like 3 days before dusting everything. Dusting every action figure, every nook and cranny. And some of the old... And Paul, you do you have any of the Doppel action figures for Doctor Who?
Oh, no, they annoy me.
Well, they are awful, but also the dust melds with the cheap plastic.
Ooh.
It's like the plastic is so cheap, it's like it's...
It absorbs the dust.
It's absorbing it because it's melting over time.
Periodically, my mother will decide that there's too much dust in the doll collection and will start dusting them. And what she forgets is that because my doll collection is deeply creepy and unsettling, some of the dolls are actually gray. They're not dusty, they're not dirty, they're gray. I watched her dust a gargoyle for an hour before I took pity.
our cleaning lady managed to lose she keeps losing sonic screwdrivers from the Doctor Who action figures.
Oh.
And at one point she said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I keep losing your doll's little knives."
it
makes Doctor Who really different if you think they're all lined up there holding their little shivs.
Only one Doctor will survive.
I'm putting my money on the eighth. He's got the most to lose.
Twelve doctors enter.
Only one will exit.
Well, William Hartnell's got a stick.
Yes, he does. Trouton's got the recorder, though.
McGann is actually unarmed. Sylvester McCoy's got an umbrella. And everybody else has got a knife. Oh, apart from Colin Baker. Colin Baker has a little probe.
Yes, he has his laser probe.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Not going there.
Too late. We're on the bus to there.
I actually bought a condo there. It's really nice.
Would that be the title of the episode, Colin Baker's Little Probe? Because we'd get an audience. We'd get Colin.
Probably.
Well, you know, it's all that time one spends dusting one's Hugos.
Oh.
I can't dust the solid bronze Hugo because it's too heavy to take down from the shelf, and I'm scared to touch the glass Hugo.
Yeah. The bronze one has lots of tiny nooks and crannies,
I'm just kind of letting it become evenly dusty, and that way no one can tell.
I only have one.
The fingerprints off the rocket ship while the cameras are.
Dude, no one pointed that out to me. All y'all were holding your rockets by the rocket.
Hey, you know, there's still the infamous picture of me, holding my Hugo and looking like I was doing filthy things to it when Paul called my name after winning for Chick Steak Time Lord. So that hit Facebook within 10 minutes.
Legitimately say that is the only year where every single Hugo awarded received a hand job.
Yep.
I feel like I need to point this out to Hugo nominees because it is that season.
Yeah.
Gloves.
Is it?
Formal gloves to the Hugo ceremony.
Okay. So to explain for our listening audience who needs footnotes because filthy.
Where does one start? Go on.
The metal that is used for the Hugo rockets is a very specific kind of thin pseudometal that actually will erode if you allow it too much contact with the oils in your skin. I've seen old Hugos that have been handled and then not wiped down. So when they're prepping you,
some opinions.
Sanitary.
Yeah. When they're prepping you for the Hugo ceremony, they take all the nominees back, and I know all of you know this is a footnote for the listeners, they take all the nominees back and introduce them to the Hugos, which is a very Alice in Wonderland moment, and they generally tell you, do not touch the rocket, hold it by the base, you want to avoid those fingerprints, you want to wipe them off as soon as possible, it's very care and feeding of. In Chicago, because the Hugo base was made of glass, all of the nominees were instructed to hold the rockets by the rocket, which is very phallic, and resulted in the rockets being covered in fingerprints. These needed to be wiped off, especially before the Locus post Hugo's winner's picture. I was the only nominee who had won who was wearing gloves. So we wound up with a line wherein I basically gave hand jobs to every single Hugo that had been awarded that year to get the fingerprints off. It was all consensual. I did not touch anyone's Hugo without permission. No Hugos will be reporting me to the ethics committee.
Not to pile onto the how to polish your own award conversation, but I've got to say that Hugos have nothing on Nebulas as far as being hard to clean. I have an Andre Norton award, and it's impossible. It's all glass. They're beautiful, incredibly beautiful awards. The Nebulas are big rectangle cubes, and the Andre Norton is an obelisk. And honestly, you cannot get, like, just... there'll always be a vague cloudiness after it's a year old or two, and it's impossible.
I'm just picturing you with the Rain-X now.
this is why I like the Campbell. It's basically a you were employee of the month at Best Western plaque. Like, it's just a plain plaque. It costs $15. Mine is actually all scratched up despite living behind bulletproof glass because the metal of the plaque is softer than the metal of the Campbell tiara. So the tiara scratched the crap out of my Campbell award. And it's great. There's just no stress about it. You figure if you ever accidentally destroy your own award, you can totally go down to the Best Western and find out where they have them made and make yourself a replacement Campbell, and no one will ever have to know.
You could even spring for the, like, extra nice fake green marbleization.
Yes, and it would still look exactly the same.
I suspect that I haven't seen the Tiptree Award lately, but I suspect that it is somewhat different now than when I won it. I won it in 2007, and it is a plastic magnetic frame from Michaels, like where there's two pieces of thick plastic and then you just sort of magnet them together and it looks like there's no frame around it. It's just one huge piece of glass and a printed out sheet from a laser printer that says Tiptree Award. The feminist cabal has awarded you the Tiptree Award. I adore the Tiptree and the tiara and like everything that comes with the Tiptree is amazing. But
no, it did come with chocolate and cash, as I
remember. Oh yeah. Yes. Like believe me, like all the other stuff that comes with the Tiptree and the art and everything is super amazing. I will say that my cats have hated the Tiptree Award since I brought it into the house and have thrown it across the room a number of times, so it looks quite worse for wear.
Damn MRA cats.
So the Pegasus Award, which is what the Filk community gives out every year, mm-hmm. has changed repeatedly. But the best change came in about 96, where somebody finally said unto the people who administrate the Pegasus, we think it might be time for an update. And the people who administrate the Pegasus said, why? It's such a beautiful trophy. It's so useful. People get so much use out of it. And they literally had to have it explained to them that perhaps giving out a hand-tooled leather cassette holder was no longer relevant.
Oh, they should keep going with that. That so sums up SF fandom. That's just
yeah, I feel like it should be an 8-track.
Of course,
these are ideas you do not need to give them.
So who has the World Fantasy Award then?
We have a couple in the collection. Terry Windling donated, when Endicott West got sold, she donated a lot of her personal library and several of her
excess
awards. Well, because she has several spaces in which she exists, these were the World Fantasy and Stoker Awards that live in her house, and she donated them to the collection at NIU. So, yeah. The Stoker Awards really,
the Stoker
really
Awards,
cute.
Amazing.
It's so
looking.
Cool.
You know, I am never going to win one. I want one so mm-hmm. bad. It's so beautiful. It's just gorgeous. It's
it is
so awesome.
Adorable, especially the way you open the little door and there's
oh, it has moving parts. I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah. They actually,
I am never going to win one.
Cat's a horror writer now.
Yeah. So for those at home.
I write horror. Yeah. I absolutely write horror.
Those at home, this is like a little haunted house is what the award is. And you open up the door, and that's where it says your name and the work.
There is an important safety tip with the World Fantasy Award. And for those of you who are at home and don't know, it's a Gayan Wilson sculpture of caricature of H.P. Lovecraft. It's I think it's pewter, but it's got a fairly significant, I think it's lead content.
Don't lick it.
Don't put it in your aquarium.
That's so appropriate.
Put it in their aquarium?
Somebody put it in their aquarium and killed their fish.
Oh,
yes.
No.
It's really tempting. It looks like it belongs in your aquarium.
Oh, God. That's horrible, but that's also the best thing I've heard all week.
So H.P. Lovecraft killed somebody's fish.
man, that's beautiful.
I know. It's. I wish I could remember whose fish they were. But yeah, do not put a Howie head in your fish tank.
If there was offensive to two different senses, it's extraordinary.
But if it was with a
I know it makes it. It's so beautiful on so many levels.
There was once the BSFA awards I gave out one year were so flimsy. They were made of plastic, and one of them actually collapsed on the table before anybody got it.
Oh,
and it was kind of like,
nice.
Oh, here, take this and this and this. Oh. And put it together at home.
Do it yourself awards.
The best award I've ever gotten is it was a podcast. I think it was Podcastle. And it was a brandy snifter. And I'm like, yes, these people know writers.
Yeah.
So an etched brandy snifter. That's how you up your game.
I've only got
move
one
on
of
from
two.
The awards porn.
Yeah. I've only got
they're
one
not
of
just
the
doing two. Fashion police for science fiction awards.
I don't know, I think they're kind of splendid.
It does. This is what the sad puppies think we do
I like
all
that,
day.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly what I was thinking. I didn't want to say the P word, but that's exactly what I was thinking.
Thanks for
I actually
great
got
Hugo
told that I was disrespecting my Hugo Awards because I had put a picture of the shelf that they're on up, and I have perched My Little Pony Summer Wing ponies on top of each of them because they are perfectly sized to be My Little Pony perches.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Summer Wing ponies, and they make me think of cats. So when I look up, I see them. And I posted this, and somebody ranted at me for a really disproportionate amount of time about how I don't deserve any awards if I'm going to disrespect them by putting girly shit all over them.
Whatever.
How dare you put girly shit all over that phallus, Seanan?
Well, I responded to that by sticking a couple Ever After High dolls on them, and so now they're girlier than ever. And Pennywise. Pennywise is also currently hanging out on a Hugo Award.
Yeah. I have a sock monkey wrapped around one of mine.
Awesome.
We have a felt Doctor Who's My Little Pony that Mary Robinette gave to Caitlin on one of ours.
Yeah.
Oh.
You took Caitlin's toy away to decorate your awards? You really are monsters.
You are monsters.
Oh, it's
the puppies were right.
It is a very delicate felt My Little Pony.
And it is not Caitlin safe because she tends to put things in her mouth. So
I was kidding.
Of Caitlin and the pony, it decorates the Hugo instead.
All right, moving
along.
Hang on now.
Wow, I'm the best moderator ever.
Who did the best bit at the end? Who did the best answers to our mad questions?
Ooh. Well, I went first. I remember that.
Well, I believe Bear was the first to do the tombstone joke that got repeated 50 times.
Many yes. times.
Yeah.
Which joke was that?
What do you want on your tombstone, pepperoni?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I did not do that.
No, I did it, because I went first.
Did you do first?
It is the joke.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did Guilty Pleasure many times.
Yes, I believe that my answer to that one was, you should see the other guy.
Mm-hmm. I said pepperoni and cheese, and then I quoted Adrian Rich, so sacred and profane.
There you go. As one should.
But I think that joke doesn't belong to, it just belongs to the world. How many people have made that joke? It's like 70% of the people we've had on the show.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is an open source joke.
I don't know who did the best in retrospect. It's always been good, though. I think it's always went well.
Lauren Buca seemed prepared. She seemed to have brought notes.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like that's against the spirit of the thing, being prepared.
Well, I mean, it was one of those things where our listeners may not be aware of this, but we do generally, I generally provide the list of questions to our guests ahead of time, because not everybody enjoys the experience of being asked silly questions out of the blue or feels comfortable improvising. So generally we provide access to the questions ahead if they would like it, and some people do better with that advanced access than others. But, yeah, Lauren was very prepared.
Yes.
I remember laughing really hard during Jay's, too.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember early on in the history of the Squeakcast when we used to try to do the reading?
Yeah.
Like, we'd tell each other in advance what we were bringing, and then...
Wow.
Well, you know the premise of the
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was that.
I felt like I should get a degree of some kind. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I was just talking to Sophia Samatar on Twitter about how, because she is, her university has a graduation today, and she's complaining about her regalia. I was like, I want regalia. I want the whole thing. I just don't want student loans mm-hmm. any more than I already have.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I will say that I'm really, really proud of the work that we did in our first couple of years, because I do think that while we were still all doing the reading, we ended up shining a light on a lot of works that people might not have come across otherwise.
Oh, yes, sure,
I'm
sure.
Really I'm super proud of that.
I don't want to be...
No.
Flippant about that. I mean, I think we did indeed do good work. It was just work that was far too hard to do. We did lots and lots of good work.
Well, that's why you can't always sustain it for longer than a run of 3 years.
I was also really relieved when we stopped doing the reading, because sometimes we don't love the same things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I'm talking about, you know, I love the Tower of Terror. I genuinely do. Bear, it's hard not to call you Sarah when we're on Skype, because it pops up.
It's okay. It's on my Wikipedia page.
Everybody I know it is. I just, that's not your name, but it's there looking at me. Bear does not like the idea of the Tower of Terror. But if I just bring up, hey, there's this ride and I like it, she can go, ooh, that's not for me, but that's not harshing my squee. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if I drag her on it and then she throws up twice and hates the universe and now is taking out a hit on me, when I bring it up on the Squeecast, she's going to be a lot harsher.
Mm-hmm. So it was that's actually not why I'm taking out the hit.
Well, I know, honey.
Ooh, outside voice.
And I think we had a lot of moments where, like, it was like, who else has read it? And sometimes we were quiet because we hadn't. Sometimes we were quiet because it's positivity and, like, we have different opinions. And it slows down a conversation when you have a overarching mission statement. And, I mean, I completely agree that it's a good thing. And it nearly killed me sometimes, I think. A lot of people know I love to complain about things, but But it was also, it was really good for me, and I think really good for the community to have a place that you could go to hear people just talk about things that they loved, and not politics or, you know, the latest thing that everybody is running to stomp on. And I think that was... It was good for me spiritually, and I'm appreciative of it. But I do, I mean, that's why we changed it. I do think that after a while, you run out of things that you can say unconditionally good things about as well, because there's a ton of things that I thought about bringing to the Squeakcast, but was like 60% of this book is my favorite thing in the world, and 40% of it I have issues with, and that's not a good enough percentage for the Squeakcast.
At the start, I was trying really hard, because I don't want to be thought of as that media guy. I was trying really hard to only ever bring serious SF and fantasy novels. And I broke out of that after about six months, because I really wanted to talk about other stuff as well. And I felt so scared that I was going to be once again going back to my stereotype. And so I think you know, I was contributing to a certain artificiality in that phase.
I don't think of you as a media guy. I think of you as a writer. Like,
thank you.
That's how I first met you.
Thank you.
Wait, you do media?
Well, as we speak, in fact.
Lynn was doing a lot of double duty, where it was like, she was on, like, when she was Tiptree jury, she'd be like, yay, I can talk about this book, sort of.
Well, a lot of the time, yeah. I mean, the thing about juries is that, generally speaking, what happens in a jury stays in a jury, but your own opinion is not necessarily that of the whole jury, so... one of the nice things about the early run of the Squeakcast was that being on the jury, which meant, of course, forced reading, because there's a ton of stuff to go through, it meant that I could highlight things that might not have made it through the jury process, but that I personally really enjoyed, and that was nice. That helped a lot. But, you know, it does get to a point. It's a lot like graduate school. After a while, you're like, yeah, I'm just not going to get the reading done.
I also like, if you look at all the Squeakcasts, you can see kind of a regression into people's childhoods.
Yeah.
The later the it's like, yeah, here's the thing I liked when I was 9.
Well, I mean, the part of the problem is that I hate everything. So.
So do I, my sister.
And after you know, like, several years of doing award juries, now I really hate everything. So as Lynn can probably attest, so trying to find things that were still awesome got harder and harder and harder. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting. I grew bitter and jaded, and although I don't actually hate everything. I just hate almost everything.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, you say that, and I, like, my heart surges, and I agree with you. And I don't think that either of us mean that we really hate everything. It's just that we're picky people. And, because we want everything in the world to be good, it bothers us on a fundamental and existential level when things are not. But when you and I love things, Bear, like, our love is like a laser beam burning the world, like... All we want to do is talk about it.
Yes.
This is very true.
And, you know, that was one of the things I think I was trying desperately to kind of harness, was the fact that when you love, it is with the firing burn of, you know, 1,000 suns. So for listeners, that level of recommendation, when you really love something that much, like, that is honest and raw. And that is important for people, because that's how they find things that they too may love. But the hard part, of course, is finding the needle in the proverbial enormous set of haystacks.
Yes.
Oh, and you had that too, or be like, okay, there's this thing I love, but it has that huge problematic element.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid to talk about it without acknowledging the problematic element, and then it is no longer Squee.
Yeah.
There's a really wonderful line from Salinger, which is, you know, one of the things that I would have brought had we opened it up beyond science fiction, from the Glass Stories, where someone says to... one of the main characters, you can't live in the world with such strong likes and dislikes. And identify with that line very strongly.
Sure you can!
It's harder. Sometimes it's harder. You have to go, you know, live in a cabin in the woods and not talk to anybody for 30 years, apparently.
if we opened up beyond SF and fantasy, I'd have brought Dorothy Sayers for one thing. Ooh. And
I've never read a book of hers. What one should I read?
Oh, well, now the ones with Harriet Vane in, the Lord Peter Wimsey. It's quite nice detectives written by a literary genius, but when Harriet Vane shows up, they become incredibly well-written detective romances with a very strong female lead. So she first shows up in Strong Poison, but Gaudy Knight is the masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they
Gaudy
get to...
Gaudy
Knight? G-A-U-D-Y. Gaudy. And they get together in that. And... Have His Carcass is the only one where she's remotely concerned about the business of writing a detective novel. And there are actually clues and red herrings and things in that. And that Harriet's in that too. What's it called? Busman's Honeymoon? I think there's only four Harriet books. But any of them are a really good thing, and the sexual tension she manages is out of tiny things. There is a scene after they're married, which is it's their wedding night, related by Harriet, and it's almost nothing. It's just a few sentences, and it's incredibly prim and proper. But my goodness. Sets up Peter Whimsey as this really heroic, in a very deep way, a morally heroic figure who keeps his light firmly under a bushel. And Harriet is amazing and complicated and super, and the two are made for each other. And anyway, sorry, I'm going on and on about something which is not...
Oh, my God, it's the squeak, yes. Paul!
It's the final squee. So
that's your squee.
That was less than 7 seconds, I hope.
Yes.
Yep, we're good.
I'm really good at that game, Paul.
I love you guys.
I do second.
I love everybody in this bar.
Yeah, I second the Sayers. Yeah.
See, and if we had gone really far afield of science fiction, I probably would have brought a whole lot of icky romance and romantic comedy films, because I'm a sucker for that stuff, and I love helping people find the good stuff.
Well, you would have been like Hepburn and Tracy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would have been talking about
The Thin Man. You guys love The Thin Man. I love The Thin Man.
Yes, we do. But, you know, I also would, I probably would have had a good 20-minute rant on The Decoy Bride with David Tennant, because that's just who I am.
So you were saved, listeners.
Yeah. So you lucked out, the listeners.
look at the bright side, guys. You're all we're going on hiatus before you all have to listen to me decompensate about the new Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie.
Are you excited or terrified?
I would like to be cautiously optimistic, but why does it have to be an origin story? Mm-hmm. Why are they all origins?
Because beginnings are easier than endings.
Or middles. I went to see Pitch Perfect 2 on Thursday night.
Want to see that, actually. I haven't seen the first one, but...
Oh, first one's
You need
good.
To see the first one. The first one is really splendid. The second one is sure a movie. But we're doing trailers, and I'm super excited because trailers! And then suddenly it's all... From the studio that brought you something that is not even remotely like this property, and the director who brought you something that makes you really fucking nervous about them being anywhere near this property, it's Gem and no holograms!
No!
And then
Kate
had to push me down to keep me from going at the screen.
Yeah.
Like, did you see the Josie and the Pussycats movie?
Yes.
One of my favorite movies.
I love the Josie and the Pussycats movie. And anytime someone tells me that the Counting Crows are just the music of my pain, I point out that Adam Duretz wrote most of the music for Josie and the Pussycats and watch them look confused. The Gem trailer plays like they wanted to reboot the Josie and the Pussycats movie but couldn't get the rights, so they bought something else that they could get cheaply and tried to shoehorn that same story in with none of the sense of humor, integrity, or actual desire to tell the story. It's amazing.
My friend Fade was commenting... She is in paroxysms of loathing over the Gem trailer, and she made the comment that it was incredibly heartwarming to see that everybody else on the entire internet agreed with her 112%. There can be something heartwarming about shared loathing.
It's weird, but I actually, who I wind up feeling bad for here, is the cast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because at least two of the girls in the new Gem movie, the one playing Kimber and the one playing Aja,
mm-hmm.
AJA, they're both Disney Channel stars.
Yep.
The girl playing Kimber was on Ant Farm and is actually a really sweet person, like spends a lot of time giving to charity, mm-hmm. is way too young to understand Gem as a franchise or why Gem fans are now angry at her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the girl playing Aja, well, she was in Lemonade Mouth, which is already kind of a Gem-type movie in that it's the Misfits coming together and we're a band now, and how do we cope? She was on The Wizards of Waverly Place. Mm-hmm. She's a really good actress. She's really fun to watch. And the thing that kind of concerns me and why I wind up feeling bad for Total Strangers who are getting a paycheck, so why should I, is I'm watching people my age yell at these late teens, early 20s girls for taking mm-hmm. a job and doing what they were paid to do.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous.
Exactly. Like, be mad at the screenwriters, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Point out that what they have done is take a property that they wanted to bank on its following and then spoiled it. You don't get my loyalty just because you bought my brand name. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But leave the cast alone. You know, unless their performances are terrible and they have genuinely failed to do their jobs, they're people. They have a right to the ball.
Yeah.
Can I share something that makes me very happy SF wise that I would have mentioned if we'd done a screencast in the last few weeks?
Yes.
Yes.
The new Thunderbirds. It's really good. It's a mixture of CGI and actual models done by Weta Workshop.
Hmm.
And it's done by a company run by Richard Taylor from Weta. And it's got absolutely that Weta understanding of what's good about a geek thing. It's got all the nostalgic stuff that works. They've kept everything that worked. They've updated it. It's faster. It's effortlessly appealing to modern children. And it's full of cool stuff. But they've kept this big emotional core. Which is that these guys rescue people. They risk mm-hmm. their own lives to rescue people in peril. They do it on an amateur basis. And in the new version, they've lost their dad, who was the central figure of the old show. He's not dead. He's missing somewhere, and they've all become accustomed to it. And so when the Thunderbirds take off, they've got his voice, which is actually the voice of the actor from the old show, doing the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 as part of the thing of the show that he reminds them every time they go. And the pilot started with "Nobody's dad dies today," and aww. it's beautiful. They've got this. They understand that we get a rush from those big Thunderbird takeoffs because of the emotional context
mm-hmm.
of them,
mm-hmm.
and they've now got when Thunderbird 1 takes off and blows some pool recliners away from the edge of the pool, which is just retracted. Granny comes out afterwards and pushes the recliners back. And then we see Thunderbird 1 going supersonic with a little spray of vapor around it and lens flare and sudden zooming in and all that. And oh my goodness, it's the thump, the emotional thump of the joy of rescuing people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real life international rescue organization now born out of nostalgia for the original show. Because that feeling means something in the real world. And Tom is already loving this. He will go 5, 4.
Oh.
And you've got to see one. It's gorgeous. And it's got the same light touch as well. There's lots of silly kid-level comedy. You know, there's lots of stuff to appeal to truly tiny little ones. And it's just a gorgeous remake, something done with real love. Anyway, I'm doing a proper screencast going on. Sorry, I've done that twice now.
Good. That's what we have you for, Paul.
Yes.
That's right. So we're at nearly an hour. I think it's just about time for famous last words, as it were.
Aye.
And I know.
No, Marie Cat, no, honey, not your words.
Oh,
that's always somebody's favorite bit.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Well, she is the seventh verity, you know. For listeners that don't understand that reference, Marie Cat tends to appear on the Verity podcast because we have this tendency to record right around her dinner time. And she's very vociferous in reminding me that I should be feeding her right now and not talking about Doctor Who.
So she did just come up and sniff the microphone here.
Yeah.
Monkey!
I know!
Lord Byron has been part of this whole Squeecast, but he has been very masculinely silent in the corner. Lord Byron's father is actually named Lord Peter Wimsey.
Oh. It all comes together.
It does. Well, Ace appears to have gotten his barking out of the way and gone back to bed. Aww. He leads an active lifestyle of barking, especially at 5 in the morning when the bus comes.
Mm-hmm. I think that my being upstairs has kept you from hearing my German Shepherd, Grimm, barking downstairs because children have dared to come within her sight out in the forest.
Oh, so Kat, tell us about your chickens.
Oh, so I got two chickens.
Chickens!
I love my chickens. I had chickens for a long time before that. I had ducks. My ducks were all murdered by an owl, an international incident. And the other chickens got old and they weren't laying anymore. And one of our neighbors had their chickens killed by a raccoon. And the kids were really brokenhearted, so we gave them our chickens that weren't laying for pets. So now I have new laying chickens. And
they
we
went to live on a
coop.
Farm.
I live on an island, but where I was lucky enough that this house had a chicken coop built already, a whole enclosure. So we repainted everything so it's all red and white and beautiful and made a sign that says Chookton Abbey.
Oh.
Chook is Australian for chicken. And so all of the chickens have titles. We've got Captain Anne Bonnie, Dame Judith Juniper, Miss Ruby and Miss Pearl Pratt, who are both barred rocks, and Lady Demelza Poldark. And they're wonderful, wonderful chickens. And we've had them less than a week, and I've already taught Ruby and Pearl to sit on my lap on command. So I'm quite pleased with that. It's kind of alarming to have chickens' dinosaur legs on your lap, but they're great. Love the chickens.
Next time you come over, I need you to sing the gospel of chickens to my mother. I keep trying to convince her.
Oh my God, it's so great. Like,
I love chickens, but she thinks they're going to peck her eyes out.
Oh my God, they're not. Like, especially if you get them young, they are completely friendly. Like, if you, so ours.
I am not the one you need to sell on chickens.
Yeah, no, they're completely friendly and trainable. I'm pretty convinced I could get Ruby to do tricks. She already kind of will jump on command for mealworms, which are their favorite snacks. So they're kind of. I know it's gross, right? Like,
and, no, it's great. It's great.
I have a problem
for the mealworm.
Gross bugs and everything, but the weird thing about the mealworms is they're roasted, so they're all crunchy, and it actually smells really good.
Oh,
I would never partake, but it does smell good. I don't know. I don't really know why I can handle that when I'm extremely squeamish about it.
I'm imagining you training them and going on the road with a chicken circus.
I would totally have a chicken circus. They're wonderful. Daniel Abraham once called chickens yard fish, and in some sense that's very true, but my other chickens were not particularly human friendly, and these ones are just so affectionate. And
an H.P. Lovecraft head wouldn't kill them, though, in the
yard. Yeah. They probably would if you used it, right?
Probably not. Well, don't put it in their water trough, you know.
Well, I hope we pass the audition.
Hi, baby.
All right.
Well, it's. Do you all want to have last words before I play us out, as it were? Or do you want me to just play us out?
Thank you all. Thank you all. I love you all. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for having me along. I never quite got why. I'm kind of I'm a bit of a token.
Not. You're the best.
This is the longest panel I've ever been on.
Yeah. I just want to thank everybody who listens to us. Basically just be buddies and record it. You know, everyone who has listened and gave us Hugos and thought that what we had to say was something worth returning to.
I just want to thank everybody for listening, and I want to thank all of you for taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedules to get together and hang out with a random archivist. You know, because that's how this started, was I feel like I kind of twisted some arms and was like, hey, let's do this thing. But I'm really glad we did.
It had started earlier. I mean, there were there were seeds already.
Yeah, but I'm glad we did. I'm glad we did it.
I also want to thank, you know, in addition to the listeners and to our silent partners, over the years who have handled our technical end.
Yes.
And done list. Art for us and websites and so forth. But I want to thank you guys, because this has been a major benefit to me on so many levels. It's been nice to know on bad days that there was something to look forward to that was, you know, guaranteed to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Ow.
Is that your last word, Shauden?
Ow.
That would be Alice.
All right. Well, it's time for me to play us out, I guess.
All right.
So thanks, listeners, for joining us. Thanks to all of our regular contributors, Bear, Kat, Shauden, Michael, and Paul. Special thanks to our unsung heroes, our webmaster, Dimitri Zagadulin, our current technical producer, David McCone Chase, our past tech producer, Carol Brown, Jeff Bonhoff at Mystic Fig Studios for the instrumentals of music by our very own Shauden McGuire, Katie Shuttleworth, who made our awesome rockin' logo, and Michael Damian Thomas for general administrative support. And thank you, Sweetcast listeners, for sticking with us. It's been lovely.
See you soon.
It's been lovely. And we hope, and you know, we can't say next same squee time, same squee channel, because there isn't one.
Well, we are on hiatus, so who
next
knows?
Squee time, next squee
next
channel.
Next squee channel.
Time, next squee channel. And you know, so we hope that you we hope you guys go out and keep talking about the things that you love.
And positivity.
Yeah, because you know what? It's good to put some joy into the world when you can.
Amen.
So so there you have it, listeners.
Squee.
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 Squee. Bye,
Squee. Bye. Night, Shane.
Bye-bye, Duggan.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Elizabeth.
Good night, Shane. Good night, Jay.
Good night, everybody.
Three, two, one.